The Volume.
This is the best of the Colin Cowherd podcast. We had a full week of amazing guests. Rich Paul of Clutch Sports, Aqib Talib and John Middlecoff on free agency, Andrew Marchand with his interesting takeaways from the new NFL media deal and Drew Brees' broadcasting future, and Chad Millman on the NCAA tournament betting. But first, my top takes of the week. I want to start with some thoughts on LeBron James' injury. Lakers superstar, high ankle sprain, out indefinitely. Insurance is something you hope you never actually need until that one time you do. Freak accidents happen to everybody. They're unavoidable. People get sick. Cars get broken into. Roofs get damaged. Insurance isn't just peace of mind. Because when disaster strikes, which it will, insurance literally saves the day. In the NBA, you can afford to lose one of your stars. You can't afford to lose two. That is, of course, unless you have three. When the Brooklyn Nets went out and got James Harden, it wasn't because they needed more talent. It was because they needed an insurance plan. KD has a history of injuries. Kyrie's in and out of the lineup. James Harden might not be a playoff closer, but he's as reliable as they come in the regular season and keeps you afloat. As for the Lakers, we already know that Anthony Davis is injury prone, brittle. And whether you like to admit it, LeBron James has now suffered two serious injuries in three seasons. Freak accidents happen, and the Lakers have no insurance plan. You'll want to blame Solomon Hill, but the truth is that Rob Pelinka now has a hole in the roof and nothing but pots and pans to catch the water. The Nets got Harden to ensure the success of KD and Kyrie. The Lakers need Bradley Beal to ensure LeBron and AD. Go and get a third star. If not, you will have failed LeBron James. Big threes aren't about stacking the deck. They're about protecting your neck. There is nothing more popular in entertainment right now than nostalgia. Disney made The Lion King and Aladdin. The streaming service Peacock built their entire library around The Office. The Last Dance was like a 10-part nostalgia drug. Looking back is fun and easy, and it works in entertainment. It doesn't work in sports, and specifically the NBA. In the past 24 hours, Steve Kerr was upset about his comments on the 2019 Warriors dynasty being taken out of context. Draymond Green called himself the greatest defensive player in league history. In both instances, they're focused on the wrong thing. The Warriors might have been our most recent dynasty, but to remain an elite organization, stop looking back. I mean, KD left for the least relevant team in New York. Klay isn't even playing. Draymond's getting ejected from games, and Steph might have been the face of the All-Star weekend, but he's no longer the face of the league. And Steve Kerr is concerned with his comments on a podcast? The real concerns are Steph and Klay's injuries piling up, and the trade deadline, and landing the next free agent. Worry less about your hurt feelings and more about your hurt ligaments. Worry less about your place in history and more about your place in the Western Conference standings. The Warriors dynasty will make for a great nostalgic documentary someday. I'll watch it, so will you. But if the Warriors want to watch another championship parade, start looking forward. Steve Kerr, who cares about a podcast and comments about KD? NBA trade deadline. Listen, two things that jumped out to me. Chicago, the Bulls double down on Zach LaVine. Bottom line is, they got an all-star from Orlando, Vucevic, who's having a good year. They're saying Zach LaVine is our guy. We're sticking with him. We just need to get him another all-star. That jumped out to me. Good day for Zach LaVine. The organization's going all in on him. The second thing that jumped out to me was Aaron Gordon, a very athletic, springy forward, going to the Denver Nuggets. That's a real move. You can do a lot with Aaron, both ends of the floor. So you got the Joker. You've got Jamal Murray, your young star, who had a great bubble tournament. You've got Michael Porter, a very athletic big. And now you've got an Aaron Gordon from Orlando, a very active on both ends wing. That's a real basketball team. I mean, that to me is a team that can challenge the Lakers athletically on the wing. You can put somebody on LeBron James. Utah, Portland do not have wing players to defend LeBron James. Denver now does, and the Clippers do. So I thought that was a very savvy move by the Denver Nuggets. They got better. Today we're bringing in my buddy, Rich Paul, founder and CEO of Clutch Sports Group. Represents LeBron, Anthony Davis, Draymond Green, Ben Simmons, John Wall. We've argued from time to time, if I have a strong NBA opinion and it's one of his clients and I say something he doesn't like, Rich always reaches out. And he joins us now, took a different route to become one of the most powerful agents in America. It is interesting that you are friends with LeBron, and LeBron's got a lot of friends. I know you. I'm good friends with Maverick, Adam. I know all you guys. Mm-hmm. But LeBron does his mm-hmm. own thing. LeBron's not going to be told what to do. And when people would say—
And I'm not either.
When people said, Rich, oh, you're LeBron's friend, were you offended a little that it was as if to say LeBron's just going to tell him what to do?
Yeah, because here's why, Colin. Here's why I'm offended by that. You didn't say that to David Falk, right? You didn't say, oh, Michael's just going to tell David Falk what to do. You didn't say that to Aaron Tellem. You didn't say, oh, Tracy McGrady and Kobe when he was there and Jermaine O'Neal, they're just going to tell Aaron Tellem what to do. So the upset part was because I understood when you look in the mirror, I'm young and I'm black. That's what I'm upset about. I'm not upset that people can think what they want to think. I'm upset that coming through the door, you're judged based upon your association. But again, by me being someone's friend. So it's like, well, I'm his friend. So that means he either A, owns a piece of his business, because there's no way that he can represent LeBron James and he pays a full 4%. And there's no way he don't own any of the business because of what? Because, you know, he's doing it for kicks and giggles, or because I should be like, you know, kind of down and saying, oh, thank you so much for whatever the case may be and not believe in my expertise. No, you can have a friendship with somebody. You can do business with somebody. You guys can respect each other in both arenas and you can make money, right? I do a job, LeBron pays, just like anything else in life. But because they want to discredit, it was about the discredit that make you upset. They didn't discredit Arn. They didn't discredit David Falk. You don't go and say that Dwayne Wade owns CAA. You don't say that. You don't say Chris Paul owns CAA. You would never say, you discredit Richard Lovett because Dwayne Wade and Chris Paul. Like, you don't say that, those things. So don't say it about me. Or you can say it, but the reality of it is, I don't take shortcuts from anyone, including LeBron. He'll tell you that. And so that was the thing. We got past it. It is what it is. You hear it from different agents from time to time, no matter what color, they all say it. Because again, everyone wants you to be successful the way they want you to be successful.
Right.
When you disrupt things, they get upset about that. There's great companies out there. We feel like we're a great company. Everyone has a fit. You're going to get who fits with you. They're going to get who fits with them. We don't run around saying who's not doing what, because we really can care less. But I've gotten parents and players send me text messages and brochures from agents in the business. I'm saying, really? This guy's been in the business 40 years. You shouldn't have to do that. But that's the nature of the business. And so I understand that. But I want to change the nature of the business. It's, you know, it's like if I see another agent at dinner, hey, man, how you doing? If it's his wife's birthday, congratulations. Send him a bottle of champagne or send him a drink. That's just courtesy. That's, you know, I don't hate you because we're in a different profession, or we're in the same profession, but we're competitive. I gave the example with Jay-Z. Jay-Z owns Roc Nation Sports. I own Clutch Sports. I did my book with Jay-Z's literary company. I'm not going to do my book with him because he owns Roc Nation Sports and I own Clutch Sports. That's stupidity. Who cares, right? This is, you know, hey, one thing going to happen. He's going to go after the player. I'm going to go after the player. One of us going to get him. Or maybe not. It may go somewhere else. And if so, that's part of the business, you know? So it's very black and white with me.
All right, Rich, I want to ask you about people you don't represent. The athlete from the past that you wish you could have repped?
Allen Iverson.
Ooh, why?
One thing about AI is people talk about Steph Curry changing the game of basketball, and he did. Great person. Allen Iverson's impact on the game of basketball post Michael Jordan was second to none. Okay? From a culture perspective, right? Allen Iverson was relatable based upon his size. He was dynamic. I was there those Cleveland days when the tickets was $10 and it was 100 people in the stands, except for when Allen Iverson came. It was sold out. You had to go to the bar inside the arena to watch the game. Okay? I believe if you take Allen Iverson out of Georgetown, I want him prior to being drafted to Philly number one. I want him prior to that. Give me Allen Iverson leaving Georgetown, coming into the league. I'm building a billion-dollar business with Allen Iverson today. There's no question about it. Still right now, he would have his retro business with the right product would probably have been second to Michael's today.
Well, he's always one of my favorite guests. I think he's the most honest, authentic guy I've ever interviewed. And he was a great player, a five-time Pro Bowler, a Super Bowl champ in Denver. He understands this free agency stuff. He's been pursued multiple times, and Aqib Talib, the Buck, the Patriot, the Bronco, the Ram, and the Dolphin is now joining us on the Colin Cowherd podcast. So let's start with this. So you got traded, if I remember, like mid-season to Tampa. Or no, New England. You got traded mid-season to New England. And that's interesting because that's a complex system. And I know I've heard that you like New England's free agent haul, but here's my concern, Aqib. This system in New England is complex. Now, you and Randy Moss, for whatever reason, you guys figured it out in an hour, but a lot of guys get lost. And don't you worry a little bit that some of these dudes are going to come in and it's going to take them a season to figure out that system?
Well, look, Colin, me and Randy Moss, we born on the same day, so we think alike. You know what I'm saying? We think alike. But on defense, not so much. It's not rocket science on defense, man. Bill actually makes it really, really easy on defense. You know what I'm saying? It's not hard at all. You know what I'm saying? It's the offense that was hard. And I think it was the Tom Brady sliced offense that was hard. So I'm pretty sure that Josh McDaniels has, you know what I'm saying, dummied it down. He probably narrowed down the lingo. He's not running the same exact offense he ran with Tom with Cam. So it's probably, I don't think it's that hard. I don't think it's as hard as it was with all the different on at the line checks and all the different lingo. I don't think it's as hard as it was when Tom was here. So I think they're going to be just fine, man. They're going to get to ground and pound. That's the name of the game right now. Get you some tight ends who could work, run the hell out the football, play some D.
You know those hot takes you post on social media? Well, now you can win up to $5,000 when you put those takes to the test on FanDuel. It's a new game called Over Under, and it's absolutely free to play on FanDuel. Here's how it works. FanDuel will set lines on things like total points or three-pointers made during every NBA on TNT broadcast. All you have to do is pick over or under for every prop. Your picks could win you a share of $5,000 during every contest. FanDuel's the exclusive home for over under, and it's available in all 50 states, so you can play from anywhere. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/over under and sign up now if you have not done so already. You create a new FanDuel account if you don't already have one. It takes less than 2 minutes to sign up. Then put your takes to the test during every NBA on TNT broadcast at FanDuel.com/over under. They can be worth up to $5,000. Age and location restrictions apply. See FanDuel.com for terms and conditions. You know, it's interesting. A guy like Kenny Golladay, who I think is the most talented free agent available, had some injuries. He just got a bag. He just got a lot of cash. It's funny, Aqib. Cornerbacks often deliver in free agency. For whatever reason, cornerbacks deliver. Quarterbacks often deliver. But receivers, it's like 30-40%. There's a lot of busts with wide receivers. Maybe it's the system. Maybe it's the ego. Would you have spent a lot of money on Kenny Golladay?
I would, Colin, man. I think he is the best 50-50 ball catcher in our league today. Like, I think jump ball wise, man, he makes Stafford look great. Just throw it up to him. He gonna go get it, man, anywhere. So, right. And that's like saying, all right, Tyreek Hill is our fastest receiver today. That's like just as important. Who our best 50-50 ball got? Golladay. Who our best route runner? Devontae. So, I mean, you like top level at something, right? If you top level at something you need to be a great receiver, then shit, you the best to me. You the best free agent. You the best wide out. And that's shit that you can't coach, Colin. That's when the play break down or it's 3rd and 9, whatever. If he in front of him, I'm throwing it up. If he even with him, I'm throwing it back shoulder. Like, I'm throwing it to you regardless. It's not a lot of guys in the NFL you can do that with. So therefore, if he available, I'm paying him.
So I'm going to throw it to the Chicago Bears, who I think have some good players, but they bring in Andy Dalton. And my takeaway is that's a hard sell to the players. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is a hard sell to the players. I said Washington, you could sell players on Alex Smith's leadership or Sam Darnold's athleticism. If you're trying to sell him Ryan Fitzpatrick at 38, I'm like, that's a hard sell. Like, you tell me, like, when you're in the room and the quarterbacks matter.
Right. Cause I mean, even Andy, you could sell he young. He only in year 5. The window of opportunity. He can get better. Look at his athleticism. You know what I'm saying? You could sell that, like you said. But even Alex Smith, you could sell his win percentage. Look at the winning quarterbacks. Look at his record, right? You could sell that. And then guys are like, man, he do win games once you really look at it. But I mean, Andy Dalton, the defense not going to be happy. You see what Eddie Jackson doing? They just not happy, bro. It's like, damn, y'all bringing this guy, Glennon, then this guy, like, man, Khalil Magnum, I guarantee you, I know how guys on defense is. It's, we separated. Long as the offense is pretty good, like, if the offense bad, the locker room is kind of separated. If the offense is good and the defense is good, then everything is good. But I'm telling you, if one unit gets terribly bad or one unit is the reason that this team is always not in the playoffs or always bad, it kind of gets separated, man. And you got to do something to kind of bring them together. You got to give them some hope. But Andy Dalton, that didn't give the defense in Chicago no hope at all.
Well, I was going to say, the Rams must have been a good locker room. Denver must have been a good locker room. New England must have been a good locker room. But when you were in Tampa, the room got separated.
Yeah, it was just, you know, I barely see you offensive guys. I mean, LeGarrette Blount was like a defensive guy. He always with us. But I barely saw the rest of the guys. Like, you know what I'm saying? Outside of the locker room, I barely see you guys. But like you said, in New England and those other places, the camaraderie is there. I see, Gronk and Edelman right here. They there. We partying together. It's everybody. You know what I'm saying? Same in Denver. Brandon McManus is over Von House. He's the kicker. Shit, he over Von House more than me. You know what I'm saying? So it was just good vibes. When offense, defense is both clicking, the vibe is good, man. And if one is not clicking, it's the coach's job to do something and you know, get that confidence. Make this group have confidence in this group, man.
My buddy John Middlecoff, who lives in the Bay Area, former NFL scout. You've heard him on the 3 and Out podcast on the Herd Network. We like to bring him over from time to time on the Volume Sports. So I look at the free agency stuff, and I generally think poorly run teams overspend on free agency. So the New York Giants in the last 24 hours went and got a Dory Jackson, 3 years, almost $40 million. And then there's Kenny Golladay. And I look at that and I think they're both not going to be stars. Adoree's he's a number two corner. Galladay's never really been in a functional franchise. Did you like both those hires, or would you be a little shy on Dave Gettleman rolling out the lettuce?
Well, Gettleman has been adamant over the years that he believes in winning up front, offensive and defensive line, which is true. I mean, that's the way you win in the league. It's the way the Giants won when they were really good with Eli Manning. They had a good offensive line. They had a good defensive line. If you are going to overpay for something in free agency, to me, it's going to be an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. Wide receivers. How many wide receivers did we see come into the draft last year that just dominate? Guys, Justin Jefferson went pick 22, and was on pace to have the best rookie season in league history at wide receiver.
Yeah.
I can find wide receivers for $40 million. I thought Albert Breer had a good point on your show earlier this week about how they're trying to learn for, you know, Daniel Jones' value. Well, I can learn that with go get, you know, Devontae Smith or whatever in the first round. I don't need to buy Corey Linsley, the center, buy Thuney, the guard, right? Buy a really good defensive lineman. Odoree Jackson, when's the last time he made a play on the ball?
Thank you.
I know he can run 8 million miles an hour, and he was the great track athlete, and he's a good kid and everything. The Tennessee Titans, whose defense last year was atrocious, didn't pick up his fifth-year option.
I know.
Let him walk. And they had used a first-round pick on him. He doesn't make any plays on the football. And then to pay that type money, I used the Niners a couple years ago. They won because they had a good offensive line, a good run game, and a great defensive line. And you can patchwork secondaries if you're causing pressure. I give Gettleman credit. He traded for Leonard Williams, and then they resurrected his career, and he's become a really good player. Why don't you double down in that area, right? Especially with how open who's Adoree Jackson covering? Not CeeDee Lamb when they play the Cowboys, not Terry McLaurin when they play the Washington football team. I don't get it. And the way I had Kenny Galladay described to me, I asked a buddy in the league, I'm like, who would you comp him to? He's like, think like a younger Alshon. He's not fast, catches a lot of contested balls.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a productive player. But $40 million, Colin, that's I don't get why they're spending on those positions when they got Joe Judge, a Belichick, tough guy. Like I would think that they would have built it completely different. But sometimes when you have the money, you know, you just maybe don't think straight sometimes in free agency, because that it felt very anti-Gettleman, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I saw the Adoree Jackson, USC kid. I watched every play in college. I've watched them in Tennessee. He just doesn't make plays. He's small. You can't, you know, I don't trust him as a slot corner. You can't put him against a big receiver. And Kenny Galladay, I actually think, is a huge talent. But to your point, I feel like Gettleman feels like he's on the clock. I think Gettleman feels it's a winnable division, and I think he overspent.
One thing I learned in the NFL, and I think it's so true just watching the league, the most underrated part about being a good corner is instincts. If you don't have instincts to play, Richard Sherman can't run half as fast as Dory, but his instincts are elite, and he just can make plays on the ball. You can't, a corner that lacks instincts is just not a very good corner. It's really just that simple.
You know, how did you view the Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll thing? Pete's funny with me. Because I'm in L.A. and is seen as a USC guy, I get a lot of flack from USC people. They're like, you're out on Pete Carroll. I'm like, I'm not out on him, but he's different. I think sometimes his offense is really outdated. He doesn't like to be criticized. Earl Thomas moved him out. Richard Sherman moved him out. The fact they took calls on Russell Wilson is a bit alarming. You know, when I talk to my people around the league, they always say, Pete's smart, but he's different, and he's hard to predict. Were you surprised Seattle took calls on Russell Wilson?
No, because I think the relationship's over. I think why they couldn't trade him, and this goes back to Ryan Pace, like, Ryan, they were never going to trade him to you. They can't trade Russell Wilson without getting a quarterback back. An underrated part, I think, with Pete, and I mean, you know this, but I think people see him on the outside. He's smiling. He's happy. He's the youngest looking 69-year-old in the history of mankind. His ego's massive, and it should be. He's had a lot of success. He's, you know, he's great at his job. He's made huge money. And now with the owner gone, he doesn't have to listen to anybody. And you've hammered that point home. Well, Russell also has a massive ego. Who is there to mediate the situation, right? You got these two guys with massive egos. Philosophically, Pete's, you know, wants to operate like it's the late 90s. And in his mind, right, I've won national championships like that. We won the Super Bowl, Russell, like that. And Russell wants to be a star, and that's star throwing the football. So they're button heads. They both have unlimited money and unlimited just power because Russell's a star, and Pete has a contract that's not going away. So who's there to, like, mediate the situation? It's not the GM. The GM answers to Pete, you know. And I just think it's kind of an untenable situation. The problem for Pete is, he's not into a rebuild. I think he would have no problem trading Russell Wilson, but the only trade that makes sense, and it's still kind of out there, just as long as this guy's still on the team, would be the Raiders. They do have a quarterback to give them.
Yeah.
Because to me, Pete can't trade Russell Wilson without getting someone that's viewed as like a top 15 quarterback that he could win with. But I do think Carr, I actually think that would be somewhat of a win-win. It gets John as kind of star. Pete then gets a lower ego guy that he can just run in the scheme. And Derek, they hired the Rams offensive coordinator. I don't know if that's just gone yet. Like, I don't think him and Pete, Russell and Pete, are just, it's kumbaya now. It's all over. Russell came out and said, he listed four teams. You've been covering sports a long time. That's pretty unheard of, right? In the peak of his powers, a Hall of Fame player, just heck, these are four teams, trade me.
All right, we segue to Andrew Marchand, who's the senior sports media writer for the New York Post, former regular on ESPN. This week, the NFL signed new media rights deals with CBS, NBC, Fox, ESPN, and Amazon, collectively worth $110 billion over 11 years, basically doubled the value of the previous contracts. Now, those media rights, as most of you know, are the contracts that give networks permission to broadcast the games. The contracts will take effect in 2023, run through 2033, and it'll basically cement the NFL's status as the country's most lucrative sports league. We thought we'd bring on Andrew Marchand and talk about it. Everybody paid double for the NFL rights except ESPN, and they also got two Super Bowls and flex scheduling on Monday Night Football. So my winner, for my perception, just initially was ESPN. Am I right or wrong?
You're right, but you also have to factor in you're talking about a last place team that went into contention. So the last deal was so bad. They're spending the most money. They're getting games that are mostly dreck. They get, you know, they don't have playoffs. They don't have Super Bowl. So they came from last place and now they're in contention. So yes, I agree with you. They did the best and they had the most work to do, but they did a good job adding the two Super Bowls, flex scheduling at the end, more games, 35% more from 17 to 23 overall, getting ABC involved. And, you know, they're very happy about having ESPN Plus also have an exclusive game, and then they can put them on there too. So it gives them some flexibility going forward.
Yeah. All right, let's segue to Drew Brees is officially now NBC. He's got a resume. He's going to do some college, some pro, some Olympic stuff. So, you know, we know Al Michaels is in his 70s. Collinsworth, though, isn't and is still respected and very employable. Am I supposed to read into this that Tirico and Brees are the future and that Collinsworth and Al are not? What do I read into this?
Yeah, 100%. That's what you should read into it. NBC won't say that, but, you know, this has been going on. Let's just start with Al Michaels, probably the greatest play-by-play TV guy of all time. 76 now. I wrote this the other day. You know, he might not throw 100 anymore, but he still throws to me 93, 94, gets people out. You know, it's still very effective in the booth. So it's not one of those situations where it's like, you know, he's missing a lot of, you know, he's missing everything and it's not the same Al Michaels. I think, again, maybe not as great as his peak, but still very good. But his contract's up. Tirico's the face of NBC now. He's going to, like, so things can change, okay? It's not official. Next year after the Super Bowl, it's going to be Tirico on Sunday Night Football as the play-by-play guy. I mean, I'd be surprised if he's not. Now, it could, again, that's not official, but like they made Tirico the face of NBC when he came over there 5 years ago. He's supposed to do more football. They had Thursday night at that time. So he hasn't been able to do it. And Al is older. So, you know, it's understandable their plan. Now, with Collinsworth and Brees, the timetable, look, NBC is doing something smart in terms of you bring Brees in, he does Notre Dame, see if he's good, and then you could elevate him. But I think that could go pretty quickly if he is good, because, you know, that's kind of their new team, and then they work towards that next Super Bowl to you know, Drew Brees and Tirico. And so I guess when you talk about timetables, I don't know, I'd be surprised. I got to see how Brees does, but I think there's a very good chance, not this Super Bowl, next year NBC has it, but the following one, 4 years from there, I would think Tirico and Drew Brees would be the people.
Tough act to follow, but Chad Millman of the Action Network's going to do it, baby. What a crazy, Millman, what a nutty March Madness. So let me start with this. The books or the public? I would guess, because dogs are covering, that the books are loving this. The books have loved this tournament. Am I right?
It has been a phenomenally good tournament because up until yesterday, when it felt like the favorites were covering for the entire day, I think there had been 19 straight up wins by underdogs. That is the most in 20 years through the first 3 days of the tournament. So 100%, I'm looking at it now, 19 and 24 through before yesterday began. So yeah, a massive, massive win for books, massive, massive win. Usually what that means is massive wins for professional bettors, because they tend to like to bet underdogs. And we actually talked about this in the podcast last week. Ohio, Abilene Christian, UCSB didn't win, but UCSB covered. Oral Roberts, you know, these were the teams that a lot of professional bettors were talking about before the tournament began.
That wraps it up for the week. We're heading into another big week here at The Volume. Make sure to subscribe and follow us at The Volume Sports on Twitter and Instagram.
The Volume.